email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Daffodil Day 2025 is fast approaching. It's this Friday, March 28th. And as you know, Daffodil Day is the Irish Cancer Society's largest and most important campaign. Buckets are shaken, cards are tapped, QR codes are scanned. It's all gone very high tech. But the bones of it are still the same, raising lots of money for a cause that touches everyone's hearts. I'm joined by three people today who are giving up their precious free time this Friday to get out there on Daffodil Day, share their stories and encourage people to support a great charity. Tara Doonan is here in Studio 7. Hello, Tara.
Hi, Ray.
Thanks for coming in.
Not at all. Thanks for having me.
Your blue jumper is matching the lovely Radio 1 blue. Mary Woods is live from our Limerick studio. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. I don't know what colour you're wearing, Mary.
Green.
Green, okay, right. It's lovely, lovely down there, isn't it, the Limerick studio?
It's beautiful down here, yes. Very good reception here.
Yes, great. And Paul Markey is on his holliers in Amsterdam. So he's talking to us by WhatsApp. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
What colour are you wearing, Paul?
At the moment, I'm wearing blue. It's amazing that I'm here in the city full of tulips talking about daffodils. Uh-huh. There you go.
Yes. You're all very welcome. And thanks so much for coming in today and talking to us. And thanks as well. And you've probably been thanked loads of times for doing what you do, volunteering for the Irish Cancer Society on Daffodil Day. Tara, seeing as you're sitting in front of me, I'll start with you.
Sure.
So this is your first year.
Yeah.
So you have a big reason why you're doing it.
Yeah, I'm a breast cancer survivor myself, yeah. Diagnosed in summer of 2022, yeah, with breast cancer at the age of 26. Wow. Sorry, 36.
36.
If only.
But even then, like, that's very young, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, so I thought it was. But, you know, of course, when I got my diagnosis, everybody had a story for me of another young person with cancer, because it just doesn't seem to discriminate, you know, and it doesn't seem to be a disease of the elderly anymore, as I suppose naively, that's what I thought. When I found the lump, I thought that, you know, 55 was in my head for some reason, that once I approached 50s into 60s, I'd have to start being aware of cancer in general. So, yeah.
So when you noticed the lump, you were going, what, this is harmless?
Not initially, no. Like, I'd always heard the phrase, my blood ran cold, but I never really knew what it meant until that moment. And I found the lump. Initially, my mind immediately jumped to breast cancer. But, then very quickly, you know, more or less stopping such drama queen. Like,
all right.
calm down.
Catastrophizing.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, you're not even 40. This has to be a sister. Hormonal or something like that. So I put it out of my mind, said that if it hadn't disappeared in a few days or weeks, I might get it checked out. And it hadn't. So I went to my local GP, who also reassured me that she didn't think it was anything sinister. The word she used was fibrous, because the lump I had wasn't the pea-sized hard lump that I would have heard about in some campaigns. It was quite large and felt almost like a water balloon under the skin of my right breast. So again, totally reassured after that appointment, but she referred me on anyway to Triple Assessment Clinic in a hospital in Dublin. So that's where I got the news that it was in fact cancer and not a cyst.
And as you went through the system and the various tests, you were still in disbelief or were you?
Oh God, yeah. So naive. So naive. I wasn't going to bring my husband Kevin with me. But I thought, we're going up to the big smoke, we may as well make a night of it and go out and book a nice hotel to celebrate, you know, what could have been. Because already that's where my head was at, that this is a cyst, it's nothing to worry about. So thankfully he was with me on the day. You know, I was in for mammograms. I hadn't been for mammogram before, and they put you in all these really awkward.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable,
positions.
I believe.
Yeah,
Jenny was telling me.
Right. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of squeezing and pressing.
A lot of squeezing, a lot of pressing, a lot of different positions. Now move here, move there, and you know, you're naked from the waist up. And I was making jokes about, this feels like I'm in some sort of kinky Playboy magazine shoot or something.
Were they laughing?
I was getting nothing. So I thought, right, God, they're awful dry up here in Dublin. But little did I know that they could probably see it on the scans. do you know, they could see it. And I say they because they actually brought in a second radiographer, which still didn't ring alarm bells in my head to read the scans. I was brought in and out twice and three times. Still just thought maybe it's just difficult to get an image of it, you know. I don't know if it was denial or foolishness or naivety, but right up until in the office with the consultant at the end of probably 6, 7, 8 hours, right up until facing him, sitting down facing him, cancer did not enter my mind since that first time, we'll say, I found the lump.
And then we hear an awful lot about when it's said, what happens. What was your experience?
It just felt like the whole world stopped spinning on its axis. Like silence was kind of the main memory I have of that time. But very quickly, what has to be done? You know, okay, what do we do about this? And he talked, the surgeon talked through the treatment plan. But then it's when he said, and of course you'll want to find out if it has spread, that the penny really dropped as to how serious cancer can be and what it means. And that's when it was like the films or what you hear, like the room went into the distance. He went into the distance. I could hear his voice, but everything just slowed down. My life flashed before my eye. All the cliche things happened to me.
Yeah.
But I remember just saying to myself, snap out. You have to hear what he's saying. This is important. Come back into the room. And I'd say 2 seconds had passed. And that was that, you know, we're suspicious it's cancer. And I'm so grateful to how the consultant, told me the news, because I think he realised that I was just, it was the last thing on my mind. And we were still wearing the masks. And I just remember him, like, I felt like his eyes were just reaching into my soul to try to get the message to sink in. You know, Tara, you need to prepare yourself that the next time we're talking, you know, it's going to be about moving
treatment.
On treatment. Yeah, because you have cancer. You need to prepare yourself. You have cancer.
You're here to tell your story. And we're going to talk more about the wonderful help you got from the Irish Cancer Society. Mary in our Limerick studio. Mary, you've been helping out on Daffodil Day for how long?
I started about 25 years ago or so when I was teaching in County Carlow, and we used to do the Daffodil Day in school. And then when I relocated back to County Clare, I got involved with a wonderful team of ladies there who were working on Daffodil Day. And little did I think ever, you know, when I got involved at any time, that I would be benefiting directly from the services of the Cancer Society.
Yeah. Well, it affects so many people.
Yeah, 1 in 2 people,
yes,
apparently.
Yes. Yeah. And it visited you when?
2020. I noticed a blood show, and it was the beginning of COVID. So a lot of the medical, you know, services and tests were shut down at the time. So getting, you know, a diagnosis took a little bit of time. And I had a womb removed in August and followed by radiotherapy. And then the following summer, a cancer showed up in the bowel, and I had a bowel operation followed by chemotherapy. So 2 cancers within kind of a year and a half or so.
She's a poor woman. Yeah.
And now I'm cancer free, thank God.
And you're going to be where on Friday?
Newmarket and Ferguson, County Clare. We're very fortunate that our Eurospar shop there very kindly allow us inside, which is great as well. So we're not weather dependent. And we have very good support from collectors and from the people in the community.
We looked at the weather forecast. It's going to be windy on Friday, so you're probably better off indoors.
Yeah, we're not worried about that.
Yes.
But weather, the Cancer Society say weather doesn't affect the amount of money that comes in on Daffodil Day. People are so generous on that day. They do realise the value of the giving.
Yeah, and what's your experience over the years? Very few people, I'd say no to you.
Nobody says
nobody.
No.
Nobody, right.
My only experience is yes. Yes, we will take a box in other businesses in the town. Or yes, you can come into the shop to collect. Yes, I will help you on Daffodil Day.
Yeah.
And the people who come, they just give money. They don't look for change.
Yes, yes, yes.
They give and it's yes all the time, which is fantastic.
You must have seen big changes, Mary, because back in the day it was just daffodils.
It was just daffodils,
now,
yeah.
Now there's a full array of products.
We have an array. And even this week I've had an array in the local daycare centre.
Right.
And so, the ladies there and gentlemen coming in are delighted to be able to
so what
do
can
their
you
shopping.
Get? What can you get these days?
We have tea towels, which are very popular.
Right.
Teddy bears, large and small. Cool bags, shopping bags, biros.
Yeah.
A variety of items, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
You have a special helper this week, I believe. Do you?
I have a special helper.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Bridget Coughlin. Bridget has been doing Daffodil Day for years. Since it started in 94 in Newmarket, she's been involved. And she's 92 years of age. And she's coming out for her hour on Friday and is really looking forward to that.
Brilliant. Stay where you are. Paul is in Amsterdam. How's the holiday going, Paul?
It's going great, Ray. Thank you very much. Lovely weather and lovely, lots of nice tulips around. So it's very, very good. Having a great time. Thank you.
So you retired from the bank and you were
That's
looking
right.
for some way to occupy your time and maybe give something back. Was that it?
Yes. I left work there about 14 years ago and was looking for something that would be unconnected with finance. And I saw an advertisement in my local parish magazine looking for drivers for the Irish Cancer Society. So I said, I can do that because from Dublin, I know Dublin well and can spend a couple of days, a month driving around. And sure enough, this fitted the bill.
Right.
So I'm a volunteer driver with the Irish Cancer Society for about 10 years now, I think.
What does that involve, Paul?
It involves taking clients, we call them clients rather than patients, to and from their treatments. So the way it works typically, Ray, is a list. First of all, you have to do some kind of it's minimal training, but it's just the do's and the don'ts of what to do when you're
right.
Doing a drive, such as you don't discuss the client's illness unless they bring it up, and even then you kind of just have to light banter in that. But essentially what happens is every day a list appears of locations and the hospital where the person at location is going to attend and the pickup time. You accept the run and then they come back with the client's name, address and where to bring them to. So you contact the client then, say, I'll pick you up on Wednesday at 9 o'clock and I'll drop you into your place of treatment and then I'll go home and whenever you're finished using me and I'll come and collect you.
A great service.
It is, and there's 1,500 drivers wow. throughout the country doing this, covering a huge number of miles and looking after over 2,500-3,000 patients. So it's very, very worthwhile service and one you feel good after you've done it for a number of years, or even
yeah.
you do it for
how many years are you? Are you doing it now, Paul?
About ten years I was doing it. Yeah,
and similar to Mary, then you got cancer in around 2020.
That's right.
Yeah,
I got cancer in July. I was doing the back garden, and I got a pain in my back. I dropped down to the doctor, and he gave me an injection in my buttock, so I had two pains then. And that,
a pain in the arse.
Yeah, exactly. So I went off then to, he told me to go and get an MRI and I was kind of thinking, well, I won't, because the pain was eventually subsiding, but I'm glad I did. And the guy tells me then that you have lymphoma in your spine, your spleen and your gullet. And we have to give you chemotherapy because if you don't, your spine will crack and you'll be in a wheelchair. So it was a no-brainer then. So.
Yeah.
I went for the treatment and it was usual chemotherapy stuff once every 3 weeks, all the usual side effects. But thankfully, about a year later, I got the all clear. But you still have a known immune system, so you pick up everything from shingles to pneumonia to lung infections. But thankfully, I'm in the whole of my health here now. And, that's mainly thanks to the great research and the improvements in cancer treatment over the years.
Yeah. And was it a help or a disadvantage that you'd been sort of driving people with cancer for a number of years before you got cancer yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. I often ask myself that question. I think it was kind of a help, really, because I was driving people and, you know, they're all fairly down themselves and all that, but some of them were positive, some of them weren't. Mm. But it kind of helped me. But my attitude was like the other two speakers there, cancer happens to other people, but not to me. Mm. It happens to the next door neighbour, it happens to the fellow down the road, but not to me. So it does hit you. It's kind of amazing. You know, it's a shock to the system and you have to deal with. But And I got it during the middle of COVID, which, believe it or not, I won't say it's a very good time to get cancer, but there was nobody doing anything else, so wasn't missing anything from that point of view. I couldn't go anywhere.
Well, you're saying it was a good time to get cancer, if there's ever a good time to get cancer.
There's never a good time to get it. No, but I had to get it. That was it.
You're obviously going to be back for Daffodil Day on this Friday.
Oh, yes. I have I have a big stand in Dunn Stores in Corner Square, which is undercover. And as the previous lady said, I've got everything from teddy bears to the trolley, you know, the trolley coins people use. They're very popular, and tea towels and all kinds of stuff, mugs and cups and things. So we'll be there with a bunch of volunteers from Kevin Tilly Community School and a couple of my grandchildren and a couple of my friends are going to give me a hand. So we'll be there from 9 o'clock until six. Yeah.
It's great to introduce the grandchildren to volunteering.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's great. And, you know, there are important things in life other than whatever they're interested in. But it's good. It's good to have that. As your previous speaker said, the Irish Cancer Society is the one charity you don't have to explain to people what it's all about.
People know immediately.
No one ever says no. People say no. Yeah. It's only a matter of how much. And we're very fortunate that even though cash is no longer around, we have QR codes and we have tap and go, and people are very, very generous.
Yes.
And,
I'm looking here, Paul, that the Irish Cancer Society has said it needs to raise 30 million this year to meet a record demand for its services. And Tara, are you availed of their services?
Yeah, I leaned heavily on them.
Yes.
Yeah. So from the very start, very early into my journey, I got a biopsy that was inconclusive. And I didn't know what this meant. So I called the support line and got speaking to a nurse who talked me through it and also talked me through basically what might be down the road for me, what might be ahead for me. I found the website fantastic. I used them as my first port of call for information because there's so much inaccurate information out there.
Don't use Dr. Google.
No. Stay away. They had brilliant stories of other people who'd gone through cancer, which I found a great source of solace and support. And then in the aftermath of cancer, I struggled. I found it a really strange time, I suppose. When I got my cancer diagnosis, it was a bit like I'd entered some sort of purgatory, you know, when I was waiting and I didn't know what was ahead. I didn't know if anything would be okay again. And then when I came out of that and I knew I was changed. It was such a big experience, traumatic thing to go through, and I had so much to process. But I didn't know either where the parts of my life that had been blown up into the air, where they were going to land, you know, and who I was going to be and what way life was going to be. And I had such a sense of gratitude and such a sense of ready to go and just live life to the fullest, but then in another way felt like a complete shell of myself and didn't have the capacity that I used to have and overwhelmed very easily and an anxiety I'd never experienced before. So I was a bit of a mess, really.
That's really interesting, because you would think once you get the all clear that's it. Yay!
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. That's exactly what
I thought.
Being
on the dancing horses or whatever.
Yeah.
So was it partly that you felt vulnerable now, that the world had given you a kick and sort of through cancer?
Felt everything all at once, if that makes sense. And I felt vulnerable, exposed, fragile. And, you know, I met a friend through cancer who had said, while I was going through treatment, she said, how are you? And I was like, I'm actually grand. Do you know, I feel strong. I feel like mentally strong. I'm not worried. Grant, she's like, yeah, just wait for when treatment stops. That's when the real work begins. And I thought maybe for a month or two, I would be a bit like all over the place, you know, like what just happened and, you know, maybe difficult to process it.
How long did it last then, the treatment, from the diagnosis to when you got the all clear?
From diagnosis to all clear was diagnosed in August 2022. I got the all clear in April 2023. So under a year.
Yeah, yeah.
I finished treatment.
But it was all you were thinking about for that year. It takes over your life, does it?
To be honest, I was more in survival mode. Okay. I wasn't even thinking about even would I be cancer free. I was so sick with chemo, I didn't have the capacity to even think about what's going on. I could only think about getting to the bathroom in time to be sick. I was just so unwell. And I suppose when the treatment stopped, it was the first time that I was maybe well enough to be like all those emotions that I should have been feeling, that they caught up with me, I suppose, you know, and everything at once.
And people in the Irish Cancer Society have seen this before in other people, just like your friend had said that this is quite common. So you were able to talk to people.
So again, I knew that they'd be the Irish Cancer Society would be the people to help me with this. And so they put me in contact with a therapist who held my hand throughout that time and, made a big difference for me.
And Mary, you were telling us there, Mary's in our Limerick studio. She'll be in the Eurospar in
Newmarket on Fergus.
Sorry, Newmarket on Fergus. Poor Fergus. That's what Dustin used to say. You'll be in Newmarket on Fergus on Friday. You were saying that you've been diagnosed with cancer twice, the second time bowel cancer, so your bowel is removed. So you've a bag.
I have a bag, yeah. So not. I didn't have to just adjust to having a cancer. I had to adjust to that as well. But like anything, you know, it's there. It's part of me now and you just have to get on with it.
But is it important to talk to other people who've been through similar things?
It is important, yeah. It does help a lot. Yeah. And you have to look for help. Help won't come to you. You've got to go and search it out as well. Yeah. And that's where we'll say the Irish Cancer Society will direct you and all that, which is very good as well.
And the brilliant thing is that they've sort of seen it all, haven't they?
They have. They're the specialists in the area. Yeah. It's like, you know, talking to a counsellor in the Cancer Society, they're a cancer counsellor. I spoke with other counsellors, you know, but I found the Cancer Society counsellor better because they could direct the conversation or kind of they could intuitively know what you needed to talk about or whatever. So there's so much value in the society, really.
I suppose Friday and the annual Daffodil Day has a lot more importance to you now.
It does. It has, yes. Yeah. But I mean, when I got involved first, I sort of say, oh, yeah, this is an interesting fundraiser. I'll get involved in it. Mm. And, you know, I knew of people who had cancer, whatever, but I never thought it would visit my own door personally. Mm. So now it does have more of a meaning to me. And also cancer, I finished chemo in January 22 and did the Irish Cancer Society Daffodil Day in March that year. And that was the day I got rid of my wig.
Right.
So it had a significance there as well.
So a big throwing away of the wig.
A big throwing away of the wig that afternoon when I finished up. I said, that's it, it's going. I don't need it anymore, you know. Yeah. So that was, you know.
You like the symbolic gestures because when you got the all clear, you went for a walk, a longish walk.
About a week after the Daffodil Day that year, I did the Cliffs of Moher walk.
Right.
Which was sort of something to achieve. I think it's good to kind of get back to doing something you couldn't do for a period of time.
It's sort of an act of defiance as well, I'd say, Mary. Sort of,
There was a bit of stubbornness there to get it done, yeah. It was a miserable cold day, but I just said, I've got to do it.
It's the two fingers to cancer. If you can do it, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, and my friend Emma left me to myself, you know, if you can do it, you can do it. If you can't, I won't push you.
Yeah.
Which was very good as well.
Brilliant. Paul, so it's the 49th wedding anniversary. Yourself and your wife are celebrating.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm celebrating it on Thursday. 49 years married to Grania, so you might give her a shout out there.
Hiya, Grania, in Amsterdam. Did your attitude to life change, Paul, after the cancer?
Yes, you realise what's important and what has the value. Things that used to worry or concern you suddenly were absolutely irrelevant. So I think I'm a calmer, saner person than I was before that, but you'd have to ask my wife for confirmation of that.
Grania. for coming. Yeah. Listen, you volunteer for Laura Lynn up there in Leopardstown as well.
I'm on the gate there. I let you in the last time when you answered all the questions in the quiz.
Because just on a bit on volunteering, which is important because you know, obviously volunteering is hugely important, but people don't realise how good it is for the person who volunteers as well as the organisation that benefits from the volunteering.
Absolutely. And I think the well-known phrase that volunteers don't necessarily have the time, but they always have the heart. So I think that's worth remembering. And I would encourage people to volunteer for the Irish Cancer Society in particular. I mean, we were talking about the driving there. Like, the patients who are the clients who have cancer are worried about their diagnosis, they're worried about their treatment, without having to worry about who's going to take me to and from my treatment. Can I afford the parking? Can I afford the fuel? I can't keep asking my siblings or my children. So you feel good when you've done something that really makes a difference to somebody who's suffering, you know. You're helping them on their journey, literally.
And Tara, that's an important aspect of cancer that is rarely talked about, the financial side of it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's not an area in your life that cancer doesn't touch, really. And the costs very quickly add up, the hidden costs, I suppose. For me personally, because I was travelling so much.
So Cavan down to Dublin.
Yeah, just diesel tolls. You're on the road all day. So you're grabbing bits of coffee and food and things like that. Parking was €15 a day to start, which wasn't really sustainable. So we had to, we were originally in a kind of an underground car park. We had to move onto the street and try to find something that was a bit more affordable, which, you know, comes with its own problems as well.
Yeah.
You're down a wage in the house. The bills are still coming in. Just all of those things, extra medication. It all adds up.
Yeah. And Kevin has to be, you know, he has to be available.
He's working
on a job. And you were relatively newly married, were you? Or
2018.
Yeah.
Putting me on the spot now. Don't make me do the maths.
No, the reason.
Yeah, we were. Were we? By four years married, were we? Yeah. 4 or 5 years.
And we were talking to Claire yesterday about having children.
Yeah, I heard some of it.
Yeah. So you and Kevin had planned, and then of course, when you're doing chemo, what are the implications of chemo for on fertility?
Well, it can stop it altogether. You know, can stop a woman's cycle, and then therefore, you know, makes them incapable of having children out the other side of chemotherapy. Now, that isn't always the case. It very much depends on the type of chemo and just the individual woman. But Irish Cancer Society work alongside the government to have, an initiative where young people can freeze their eggs, or basically fertility preservation for anybody who is still of childbearing age, be it man or woman, to preserve their fertility and to give them a chance out the other side of cancer treatment.
So that's paid for, is it?
Yeah, it's right. Free for the right. For the patients. Yeah.
So you've done that yourself? And
yeah, we've done that. Yeah. We hadn't family before I got my diagnosis. We were actually due to do our first IVF consultation 2 days after I got my diagnosis. So had to cancel that very quickly.
A lot happening there.
A lot happening. And ironically, that's probably not the right word, but we ended up back at the same clinic I was due to go to, because they're the clinic that actually do the fertility preservation.
Right.
So we ended up going to for my consultation and my IVF, but not in the way that I thought
it was going to happen.
Yeah. But it was, look, it was, it was great to have that hope.
You've embryos frozen somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere.
Right. What does that feel like?
I don't know if I've gone there yet.
Okay.
Do you know? I don't know
fair
if
enough,
I've
fair enough, fair enough,
if
yeah.
I'm through fully or past the rest of it.
Yes.
First, before to even
consider.
I'm kind of just starting to dip my toe in now to even move towards thinking about it. Yeah.
Well, listen, you're all brilliant. Paul, enjoy the rest of your holiday, and congratulations again to yourself and Grainne on your 49th wedding anniversary. And I'll see you up at the door.
Thank you. Just one more important thing I might mention to you, because about all the talk about cancer and all that, very important to know that thanks to the research, this is some of it's funded by the Irish Cancer Society, and targeted treatments, there are 215,000 cancer survivors in Ireland today.
Yes. And you were three
You've
of them.
You've spoken to three of them.
You're three of them. Yes,
exactly.
Yes, exactly.
But 215,000 is the most positive thing to finish up on.
Thanks, Paul, for that. Enjoy the rest of the holiday. Mary, thanks so much for coming into our Limerick studio.
You're very welcome, Ray.
Good luck in the Eurospar on Friday. And I believe there's a post office nearby as well. So you'll be people coming out of that as well. Great. Okay. Thanks, Mary. Lovely talking to you. And Tara, thank you. Thank you so much.
No, not at all.
Good luck on Friday.
Thank you to Mary and Paul, because it's the volunteers like them that are the heart and soul of the Irish Cancer Society and everybody that is out donating on Friday. Like, they're the people that keep the whole thing going. So thank you.
Thanks, Tara.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.